Good morning, and welcome to everybody. It's good to see that people are still sharp in August in Washington on Monday morning. If you've overcome enough hurdles, that obviously taking on Afghanistan is worthy of your energy. I'm Rick Barton. I'm the co-director of the Post-Conflict Reconstruction Project here at CSIS, and on behalf of John Hamry and my co-director, Karen Von Hippel, I'm just happy to have you here. I'd like to thank Bob Kinn, who many of you know here, and Steve Ross, who from my office, for helping to put this program together this morning, and they've really done most of the work, so we very much appreciate their help. The reason that we're interested in this project is Mackie Kirsch as well, who's been constant help for us at DOD. The reason we're interested in this morning's presentation and wanted to host it is that it's really the intersection of a couple of projects that we have been working on. We've been working on Afghanistan for a couple of years, and we have an ongoing project right now, which is a Measure of Progress Round 2 project that Seema Patel from our office is leading, and she's in Afghanistan right now through pretty much the middle of September, about a six-week trip there where we're interviewing people all over the country. We have six Afghan interviewers. We're talking to over 1,000 people in about half the provinces, including Kandahar right now. And that will be a product that we're doing that will be out later this fall. The more direct project in terms of the communications and connectivity and creating community project is one that we have been calling the Hub Project, but it really is trying to figure out how to bring this growing community of people, both on the civilian and the military side, as well as anybody, however others might describe themselves, bring them together so that we actually create a sense of community and we start to gain the benefits of information and knowledge that exist across these various groups. The final draft of that report has been presented. It will not be in the marketplace until mid-September, but we can get you copies if you contact us, or we can certainly send you a link that will give you a pretty good idea of what the final report will look like. So we're trying to bring those things together. This event here with the Minister Sangin certainly helps us to do that today. We've been honored to have a number of his colleagues here over the past couple years, including President Karzai. So you're walking in distinguished Afghan footprints as you come today. I've asked Jim Kraft if he would help with the introduction of the minister, and it will be brief because we have given you, I think, bios on both of our guests here. The idea for the program today is that the minister will speak for about 15 minutes, and then we'll really have most of the hour for a conversation with him, questions and answers and comments. And then at 11, we'll Chris Rivero and Kristen Peterson will make a presentation on the Village Communications Network, and which has been set up here, which is just some technology that's available that they've been developing that would be helpful for people in their work, not just in Afghanistan but elsewhere. So I think that's what we need to do in this next hour. Again, welcome to everybody, and if Jim, if you could take over, thanks very much.
I'm sure everybody has to adjust the mics down when you come up after you speaking. Before I get started, just as sort of a level setter for us up at the front, how many people here are relatively new to what's going on in the Afghan ICT sector? Is there anybody here who's just learning about this from the start? Okay, there are a few people. So we'll try and explain any acronyms and not make assumptions that everybody knows what's going on. Let me just say that there's a lot of news that comes out of Afghanistan. Most of it is fairly negative or scary. But there are some really good things happening in Afghanistan, and chief among those in the eyes of the U.S. is what's been happening in the information communications technology sector. It is a dramatic story of global proportions. And there's many factors that have have contributed to that. One has been the partnership with the government of Afghanistan with the private sector, which has empowered this dramatically, and the minister will go into that. There has been a real partnership among the donors in the government of Afghanistan. The U.S. has taken a large role, as has other organizations such as the World Bank, UNDP, and others in the ICT sector. Many of the people in this room have had a portion of it. We have a kind of a new approach to reconstruction and development for this sector that has relied on collaboration among all the players, within the U.S. government, among the donors, between the government of Afghanistan and the donors and the private sector. I think the word has been partnership. There's been true partnership, a win-win partnership. I know that's a buzzword, and people kind of smile when you say it, but it really has worked, and we have the results to prove it. But one of the factors, I've been in the job as senior telecom advisor for the U.S. In Afghanistan for about a year. One of the real factors that we have seen has been the leadership of the person who will speak next, Minister Sangin. There's many countries in the world that have tried to leverage this technology, but it usually takes somebody who brings vision and becomes a role model for the other people in government and the private sector, and Minister Sangin has been that person. He's worked in a variety of roles before he became Minister of Communications, but if you look at what he's accomplished and what the ministry has accomplished under his leadership, I think it's a story that perhaps should be spread beyond this room. And I would ask that after you've heard it, ask the questions, learn a bit more about it, but then tell some other people about it, because there's a lot more that's going to be done in the next few years. So without further ado, let me introduce Minister Sangin.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, good morning to all of you. It is a great honor for me to be having this opportunity to be giving a speech on telecommunication and generally on developments in Afghanistan in this very prestigious center. And I see many of you who are here, and I wish to thank you for taking the time and interest to be present here this morning. Let me start by saying that when I returned to Afghanistan in 2002, after being away for 22 years, what I saw, it was very sad and shocking. When I landed in Kabul and I saw all the broken planes, tanks and artillery lying all over the airport and along the route going to the city and seeing all the buildings being in ruins, it was a scene. For me, it was completely difficult to understand. And the 25 years of war, as I learned gradually, had destroyed almost all infrastructure in Afghanistan. The education system, schools, the healthcare system, government system as a whole, no presence of any kind of army or police. This was unbelievable to see in my own country. More than anything, the people I saw, in the way they looked, the way they were having their clothes, in their appearance on the street, I felt as if I had come to a country other than Afghanistan. It was not the same as I had left 22 years back. And to summarize all this, in that same year, the United Nations Human Development Index for about 180 countries showed Afghanistan was the last country on that list. So that gives you a picture, a general picture of the situation in Afghanistan. For me, it was, despite all this, still a very positive experience. Having lived abroad for 22 years, never knowing whether I will ever be able to come to my country. But finally, to be able to come to my country, this was in itself a big positive experience for me. So, Afghanistan, due to international crises, wars, internal civil wars, has been completely destroyed. But now, thanks to the support of the international community to come back and help Afghanistan in the last 5 years, the question can be asked, has there been any change? Has anything happened? Well, yes, I think the first thing is that we no longer have dictatorships, government ruling by force. For the first time in Afghanistan, democracy has been established. The people of Afghanistan got together in the traditional Loya Jirga, and they were very wise. Without any big problem, they united on a constitution for Afghanistan. This was a big success for a country like Afghanistan, where the same people had been fighting each other for many, many years. Now they were able to sit under a tent and agree upon a common constitution for the whole of our nation. Based on that constitution, we all know we had successful presidential election, and His Excellency Hamid Karzai was elected as the first elected president of our country. And afterwards, successful elections took place across the country, and we have now the lower house in the upper house of parliaments with elected delegates from across the country. During these 5 years, lots of new laws have been passed. It is the investment law, taxation law, and many other laws, including the telecom law, which creates the framework in the new environment for development in Afghanistan. Reconstruction has been the priority for the government. And in fact, during these 5 years, one of the major efforts has been in roads. The people of Afghanistan, they demanded road as their priority number one, electricity as second, education, healthcare. These are the expectations of the people. So the government has responded with the support of the donor community. We have today thousands of kilometers of paved roads connecting major cities across the country. And that effort is continuing. Schools have been built again across the country, hospitals. There has been a lot of money spent on building the National Army and the National Police Force. Today, after 25 years, I feel that perhaps one or one and a half generation which did not have the opportunity to get education, today we have more than 6 million children in young people who are actually going in school. Many refugees which were spread across the world, particularly in the neighboring countries, Pakistan and Iran, they have returned to Afghanistan. And last year, the United Nations Human Development Index actually translated all this improvement into showing Afghanistan as being number five from the bottom. So there was an improvement, number five from the bottom. Where has been the improvements? Well, I mentioned roads, hospitals, schools, whatever, but there are certain areas where there has been more development than other. I think I can mention banking. When I first came to Afghanistan, there were no banks. There was one, what we call Sarai. It is a kind of shopping center, which was acting as the main money exchange and transfer, like the National Bank of Afghanistan. Private people in shops doing money transaction, getting money from the people, sending it abroad, bringing money from abroad. All these transactions were done by private people. And I myself used that service for the first 1 or 2 years. Today we have 8 or more private banks. This includes international banks. For example, Standard Chartered Bank is there. Two banks from Pakistan are there. One bank from India is there. And additionally, new entrepreneurs in Afghanistan, they have established banks. What is more important, previously we only had government banks and people were not trusting, putting their money there. Now the trust has come. People are putting their money in the banks. These banks have millions, hundreds of millions of dollars deposited into these banks. The other area of visible change is the media. Afghanistan has very liberal laws now on media and freedom of speech. We have today 7 national TV channels operational. They are actually operational. More than 12 have taken licenses, so there are more on the way. And there are hundreds of FM radio stations across the country. I was very happy to be in US and still being able to see programs, TV programs from Afghanistan. One of our national TV, Aryana TV, is actually broadcasting through satellite. And it is the people, the Afghan community abroad, in US, in Canada, in Europe, all over the Middle East, they are very happy to get connected to their country again, to be able to see the events happening in Afghanistan every day. So this is quite visible, we see it today. Of course, in telecommunications, we have had good development. The telecommunication, I feel, today has made tremendous improvement in the quality of life of our people. 4 years ago, there were no communications in Afghanistan. Nobody in Afghanistan could talk to anybody inside our country or abroad. Many times, people travel to neighboring country to make or receive calls from their relative in Europe or US. And they would spend week waiting for their calls. Today, in Afghanistan, more than 1.5 million people have phones, mostly mobile phones. And that is a penetration of 6%. In the way it is moving, we think it is going to double in the next 3 years. It's going to double. Today, the telecommunication has coverage of over 70% of the country's population. So over 70% of the country population has access to telecommunication services. Our effort has been to create a competitive environment where the private sector has the capability to provide telecommunication services in the most efficient manner. And we have been very successful in this. Last year we had initially in 2003 two operators, mobile operator and one government operator. Last year we issued two new licenses. And despite the situation in our country, we were quite successful in attracting two very important investors into Afghanistan. And they actually, in a very transparent auction, they offered to give the government $40 million each, total $80 million, to the government for obtaining these two licenses. And due to this competition, today the cost of telecommunication has dropped considerably. 4 years ago, people used satellite phones and that was costing $2 a minute. Initially, when the mobile services started, the phone costs were over $300 to become a customer. Today, this has dropped. To get a SIM card, it has dropped to only $5. And people can make nationwide calls for 10 cents a minute. 10 cents a minute. The people are very happy because they are all able to talk to each other, and not only within the country, but as we all know, there are millions of Afghans who are abroad in US, in Canada, in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, all over the world. Afghan families, they have very strong family ties. And communication has helped put the Afghan community abroad in touch with their relatives in Afghanistan. And generally, the interest for the use of ICT, especially by the young people in Afghanistan, is huge. There has now in the cities, apart from the education, the public education, thousands of private computer and English learning centers have come up, private ones. And many of the young people, after finishing their school, are going straight to the centers and they are learning ICT and English language. The telecommunication has been a driving factor for the economic development in job creation. The telecom sector, the companies working in the telecom are employing about 8,000 people directly. But indirectly, we estimate that another additional 30,000 jobs have been created. And that means total of around 40,000 jobs with where each of these person have a relatively good income of possibly $300 to $500 per month. And this we feel has been a great achievement because it means 40,000 families have now a better life. More than $600 million total investments have been made in the telecommunication by the various companies. In this, we also expect to double in the next three years. It has also been a good source of revenues for the government. Last year, the revenues for the government from the telecom sector were $70 million. In this year, we expect those revenues to be about $90 million. Apart from the Ministry of Finance in customs and taxes, telecommunication is today the only other sector which is generating revenues for the government. We feel that the telecommunication has also brought about an improvement in the government itself, in making the government more effective. And it also has helped in bringing about more security, and most importantly, in our national unity. Afghanistan is a country of a very mountainous countries. The people were isolated from each other. They were divided. And now telecommunications, TV, radio, they are bringing the people together. If you think during Taliban, that means 5 years ago, internet was forbidden in Afghanistan. So that means nobody knew what internet is. But today, if you come to Afghanistan, you go to any government office, you will see computer on the table. People are using ICT for their day-to-day work. And Also, the media is using telecommunication quite effectively on a daily basis. If you watch the TV program, Afghan TV program reports, we get TV reports from across the country using the telecommunication. Before, we didn't know what's happening in Kandahar or Helmand, but today, every hour, there is TV news, and there is somebody in those provinces who is reporting events live to Kabul, what's happening there. We feel that we had made good progress, but we still have plans for big plans for the future. Today, Afghanistan is connected mostly by satellite links, which has limited capacity, also quality is an issue. We are planning to build nationwide optical fiber ring to connect the whole of our country through ground communication system. This will give us broadband connectivity, not only within the country, but also to neighboring countries, bringing transit traffic, connecting countries across. I was in Tajikistan, and they were very eager to see this happen because we are landlocked, they are even more landlocked. So they want to see that something happens in Afghanistan so they can get out to the world. Today, as I said, 70% of the population has access to communication. We want this to expand, and we hope that within the next 3 to 4 years, this will be more than 90%, probably 95% of our people should have connectivity. So just, I hope I'm not taking too much time to conclude. What I would like to say is that this has been a good start, but you know, when a country is destroyed 25 years, you do not expect that all that to be repaired in 5 years. The time required to rebuild the country, the money required, the resources required is enormous. And I think this is where we can say that the support the international community from the international donor community is very essential for this effort not to be like halfway finished. We want this to have a good success from this. I think our idea is not that Afghanistan should be dependent on this international donor support forever. I think our idea is that Afghanistan has good potential. Don't forget that 25 years ago, before the war, Afghanistan was self-sufficient. We had our own budget, we were able to do reconstruction projects, everything was working. We didn't need to get support from the donor community for the salaries of our government officials. Huh? This is so we don't want that. Actually, we do want to stand on our own feet. And I think my own feeling is Afghanistan has the potential. We have the human capacity. Afghans are very capable. You see, we have many Afghans now in the US. You see, they are doing very well. They are doing very good jobs. They are professors in the universities. They are very successful businessmen. Only thing is we need to create the right environment. And then these people, the same Afghans who are in Afghanistan, they will do the same. We have resources. We have oil, we have gas, we have minerals. We have one of the biggest mines of copper, for example, in Afghanistan. And all these things are there. Most importantly, we have rivers, and it's a big resource for energy production and also for agriculture. These resources are today not utilized at all. No utilization of all these resources I mentioned. I think the Afghan National Development Strategy and the Afghan Compact, the two documents which had been agreed by the international donor community in the Afghan government for the development of Afghanistan in the next 5 years forms a good basis. But what we have to make sure is that it is not just two documents sitting on the shelf. I think what we would like to see is that we work together, and we work together very hard to make that possible. Thank you very much.
hold it up for the questions. You guys want to hear?
As you wish. As you wish. So.
Thank you very much, Minister Sangin. I think the minister will just stand and take questions, and I'll just call on people. We do have a microphone here so people can hear you. I guess Steve and Brad will be walking around. Why don't you just raise your hands, and I'll just go. Why don't we start with this woman, and if there's somebody over here, the next. Okay, we'll just go one at a time here. And please introduce yourself and your organization.
I'm Lynn Gallagher with Telecom Telematique. We actually met, I think, in March of 2003 in the ministry.
Okay.
And I remember at that time having to make arrangements to get a SIM card, very special arrangements, because everybody wanted my SIM card when I left. And I'm really pleased that you now have four operators and that the cost of is down to 10 cents a minute. That's really a remarkable achievement. I was wondering, could you tell us a little bit about the new operators that have been licensed and in the mobile operators and so who is running these internet training centers?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I'm happy that you mentioned that I meet so many people. At that time, I think I was the advisor to the minister, senior advisor to the minister. In 2003, we had initially two operators. One was AWCC, Afghan Wireless Communication Company, which actually had a license from the time of Taliban. But that was a kind of license with monopolistic that they should be the only operator, which we said it is not possible. So we had a tender process in 2003 and issued a second license. And this license was it was won by a company called the AKDN. It was one of the major partner was Aga Khan. And that company is very successful today. And they established their network in 2003, and this year they celebrated their third anniversary just, I think, this month. And they are now one of the major operators. I think they claim to have 1 million subscribers. You see, in three years, a company coming to Afghanistan and getting millions of million subscribers. This is a tremendous achievement. The companies are required to show their audited reports to us. And I'm happy to tell you that this company already became profitable within the first year of operation in Afghanistan, in a country like Afghanistan. So what happened was, with these two companies, there was an agreement between the government in these two companies in their license that the government will not issue additional licenses during the first 3 years of their operation. And that date expired on the 9th of January 2006. So what we did was is that already in 2005, about 7-8 months before this deadline, we started the process of giving new licenses. We had a process of international bidding, and we promoted this process across the world in different forums to make people aware of this. And five companies took part in the tender, and the winning bidder was a company from Lebanon called Investcom, and their bid was $40.1 million. And there was a second company, but they failed to pay the $40 million in time. And then the government entered discussions with Etisalat. This is a very financially very strong, and also a very strategically a very important telecommunication company in the United Arab Emirates. And the Afghan government strategy was to attract an investor from the Middle East, particularly the United Arab Emirates, in the telecom sector, which we feel will then also bring investment in other sectors from the Middle East. And Etisalat also agreed. They have taken a license. They have paid the $40 million. The first company, which got their license at the end of last year, they launched their services 3 weeks ago. They are now operational in four cities: Kabul, Mazar-e-Sharif, Kunduz in Jalalabad, in four cities already from the start. And they are expanding into the other cities also. Etisalat intends to invest $300 million in the next 2 years and have a nationwide network in place within the next 2 years. So three mobile operators are already operational. The fourth one we expect to come in the month of November. And your second part of the question was, who are running the ICT training centers? Well, there are two kinds of training centers. One is learning computer, like computer language, computer software programs, and English language. Thousands of these are actually privately run centers. Somebody who understands computers or English, they open a shop, a small center. These are all private run. But in parallel with that, the Ministry of Communication also is running about 13 ICT training centers across the country. These are also self-funded from the revenues we receive from the participants, from the students, and we pay back that to the teachers, and that's also working very well. Yeah, thank you.
Next question, yes.
Here. Hi, Zoya Meskova from Relief International. We are working with bringing connectivity to some of the schools in Afghanistan, and I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about that, what has been done on that plan, and what you're planning to do. Thank you.
You are right. I think one of the plans we have is to, now that we have had a major focus during the last 3-4 years on telecommunication, is to now focus on ICT, on the use of ICT, on the development of ICT. And here I think what we can say is that already in many schools there are computer classes have been established by different donor from different countries in the Kabul University. And I was, for example, in Helmand province in Lashkargah. I went to a girls' school, and even there I saw a computer classroom. So a lot of these supports are there, and some schools have computer classrooms. But generally speaking, there is no kind of national plan. And one of the things we are now planning to do is that together with the new Minister of Education, work together on a strategy how to bring ICT more and more into the schools. But we have to be aware of the of some of the problems. I think the problems are the connectivity. So we can only do it in areas where there is connectivity, first of all. Because if we just have a special solution for the school, it becomes very expensive. And the second thing is the availability of electricity is another big problem. In many, you know, in Afghanistan, one of the major problems today we have is energy. And I think there is very little energy available. If I can give you the numbers, they are like negligible. In Kabul, the capital city, you know, today we have less than 200 megawatt of power available for a city of 4 million people. And then we have power available in some cities in the north coming from the neighboring countries, Uzbekistan. We have power available in Herat coming from Iran. And we have power available in a few cities in the south coming from Iran also. But our own power generation is not there. So I think for the short term, Afghanistan plans to expand the power grid using imported power. But in the long run, Afghanistan would need to have its own sources of power generation. So I think this is one of the issues we have, because if you give a computer to a school, the next thing is you need to give them money to run the diesel generator, and you need to pay them money to have a man to run the diesel generator and keep it going and do the maintenance on that. So it becomes a little bit more complex. So I think we are aware of these challenges, but we have to make a start wherever there is possible, wherever there is connectivity, and wherever there is power is not a major issue, I think one can start this.
Mr. Minister, I have a couple questions that speak more generally to the reconstruction issues.
Yes.
The first is sabotage and how you've dealt with sort of the security of the infrastructure, because obviously that's a real challenge throughout Afghanistan and most of these reconstruction countries. The second would be your revenue collection model, because the tradition of collecting revenues through central organizations has generally been worn down through war. Mm-hmm. And clearly this is one that you not only have the kids on the street selling you the cards, but there's a way the money seems to travel reliably.
Yes.
And maybe a lesson that could be shared with the government for collecting tax revenues eventually or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I think the third part of the question is the broader one, which is, are there any other lessons that you feel you have learned in your sector that would be readily should be picked up by other parts of the government, perhaps with the same kind of agility that we've seen in the cellular phone industry.
Mm. So the first part was about
the first one was just the sabotage security of infrastructure. You obviously have a significant investment, and we haven't heard great tales of attacks on those.
Yeah.
And the second was the revenue collection.
Yeah, and that one is the other sectors. Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a very good question about sabotage. Well, you see, in Afghanistan, the telecommunication sector today is having three major issues. One is already I mentioned the power. The whole telecommunication infrastructure today is running on diesel generators. If you can imagine, I don't know the exact amount, but maybe $2 to $3 million monthly is spent on diesel fuel to keep the communication systems running. The second issue is the security. You know, in US, I'm going around, I'm seeing on top of buildings some antennas, then I know this is the base stations. But in many cases, you even on the along the highways, you just close the door, and it's a small box. The door is closed, and it is running. But in Afghanistan, in fact, in each of these base stations, the companies have 24-hour guards there. They have at least two people who should be present 24 hours a day guarding these infrastructure, these sites. But in fact, this is an important point, and that is the telecommunication, thanks God, so far has been very lucky. It has not been targeted. The fact that nothing has happened does not mean that it is because of these two security guards. It is just that it has not been targeted. And well, I think the explanation for this is that it is used by everybody. Yeah. So all need it. We all need communications. Huh? So they don't want to attack it. They don't want to. They all need it. Yeah?
Yeah.
So the second one is the revenue collection. In revenue collection, the private sector companies, you know, in my experience, back in the beginning of 1990, I used to be in Sweden, and there suddenly our marketing people came with a marketing campaign that in 10 years, 9 out of 10 Swedes should have a mobile phone. And for us, this looked, you know, impossible. 9 out of 10, that means, you know, everybody should have a phone. But you see, something happened in the middle of the 1990s, and that was the development of the prepaid systems. And that brought about this tremendous change in the telecommunication. Up to that time, the companies were only giving SIM cards to people with credible documents such as employment, that he's employed, that he has income, that he has a house or some place, address, where they can send the bill and receive the money. All these issues were there. So that limited the number of possible people who could have mobile phones to maybe 10-20% of the community. But with the prepaid system, the market opened. Doesn't matter who wants mobile phone. Or is he unemployed? He has no money. You see, if we had that kind of situation in Afghanistan, you would not get any customers. We don't have so many people employed, you know. So, and we don't have so many people with good income to be able to be credible for a company. But in fact, the prepaid concept has made this possible. And in Afghanistan, the operators, the communication operators, they have no problem. They get all their money in advance. And in fact, this is one of the good thing with it. Actually, not getting it advance from the customer, but actually they get it even 2-3 months ahead of the actual usage. Because what they do is they sell the cards to a dealer. So they get their money already when they sell it to the dealer. And then the dealer has it in his shop for 2-3 months selling it to the customers. So you see, this is one industry where the money is coming so much in advance. So much in advance. And of course, the government-owned company of One Telecom does not have this prepaid system. And there we have problem with collection. A lot of the people, they don't pay on time and money is due and it takes a very, very long time for people to pay the money. So a lot of money is owed. And this is especially owed actually to government departments. And you know, in Afghanistan, the mentality has been in the past that government services should be free. So if it is phone or electricity or whatever, it should be free. Right. Nobody is paying. If you listen to the Minister of Energy, he is crying in each cabinet meeting that, you know, the government offices owe me so many billion of Afghanis in unpaid bills, you know. And then, of course, the government offices, they don't have money because this money is owed from previous years and they are not in the budget, so they cannot be paid. So the revenue collection, I think, for the private sector is not a problem. For the government, it is a problem. In telecommunication, it is a problem. In the energy sector, it is a problem. In also other water supply. Yes, you are saying what we can do to use this example of telecommunication for other sectors in Afghanistan. I think this is a very good question. And today, in Afghanistan, the telecommunication is showing the way ahead. And why it has been so successful is because we have done what our constitution says. The constitution says Afghanistan should have market economy. It should have the private sector engaged in the investments. And so that's what we have done. We have brought in place the necessary framework, having the laws in place to actually have the right environment for private sector investment and to have the confidence of the private sector that by coming to Afghanistan and investing in this sector, their investment is protected, in that they are being supported by the government, and that the government will be transparent in their approach to the different operators, in that the government regulatory unit is treating all of them in a fair manner. So I think that is the model, and I think I feel that this model can be used in other sector, particularly in energy, in mining, in industry, in agriculture. There are so many areas. I think the same model can be used.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, Bob. And then back there.
We can probably hear Bob.
Sure. Your Excellency, I was wondering if you could share with us your observations on how President Karzai has been able to use the video conferencing capabilities of the government communications network in Afghanistan, and also your vision for the future of the village communications network.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, if you can imagine that 4 years ago there were no communications in Afghanistan, even people were unable to talk to each other. Last year, we were able to complete one of our major projects to connect the 34 provincial capitals of Afghanistan to each other and also to the world. And this network is actually capable of providing voice communication, data communication, and also video conferencing facility. And in fact, we inaugurated this network for the inauguration. Our president, His Excellency Amit Karzai, was very happy to inaugurate this network. He was actually, when we were in that room, he was feeling very proud and extremely happy, because there he was in his office and he was able to have a TV screen in front of him, and through that TV screen he was able to talk simultaneously to several governors across the country. They were in the north, they were in the east and south, far away distances, and he could see the governor and all the other people sitting there, and he was able to talk to them. And in fact, that system has been used by the president on several occasions afterwards, because, you know, with the security problems, with the incidents taking place in different parts of the country, the president, of course, very much want to go to these places to see the people and talk to them. But due to the distances in the time schedule, he today uses this facility and establishes a video conferencing with the people on the other side. They all come and gather in a room like this. The people tell him what is the situation, what are the issues, what are the problems, and then he is also able to talk to them. So in fact, this has been quite a tremendous achievement for us in establishing such an advanced network in Afghanistan. And this project was supported by the World Bank. We got the funding from the World Bank. And in fact, it was implemented by GSI, the Globcom system incorporation. And Paul Johnson is here. He's been working very hard. So I'm happy to see him here. They have done several projects with us in Afghanistan. And the other thing you mentioned is, of course,
One thing I'd like to mention. I think this will be your presentation today will be on our website, so that the president will be able to listen to what you said back in Kabul tonight.
Good thing you said.
Yeah. I hope I will not be in trouble. Yeah. So coming to the other part of your question was the village communication network. Yeah. Today we are working on bringing connectivity to the districts. These are the smaller government units. We have the provincial capitals, and then within each province we have several districts. These are the local administrative units, government units. We have already started connecting these districts to the national network. Today about 130 of these districts have already got connectivity, and they have this connectivity means phone services for the government officials, plus phone services for the local community. And in addition to that, it has data capability, so we have internet in very remote areas today, and areas which had no connectivity at all have suddenly these very modern capabilities of having voice and internet connectivity. So what we have now visioned for the future is to expand this. Why should it be limited to districts? And there are about 365 districts in Afghanistan. We have now, the technology is very simple, and it is possible to expand it to villages. So we are now working on a concept to use the same technology and expand the network to thousands of villages, where we want to establish a kind of public-private partnership, where the village unit, which is a small satellite antenna and a small electronic device placed in the village, the cost is about $2,000. So we feel that the villager will be able to invest that amount of money and buy this unit, go to his village, and establish a kind of public call office where he can then provide service to the people. This has the two advantages. One is bringing connectivity to remote areas, and the second one is creating additional jobs, which is what which is very much required in Afghanistan.
I think we have a couple more questions, and then we do have a chance to look at this technology that the minister was just talking about. So maybe we could, quick questions. I think the woman in back, and then the man in front, and then let's Kristen and Chris will show us what they've got. And
Minister Sangeen, I'm Renee Brock from USAID. I had the pleasure of seeing you deliver your remarks at the World Summit on the Information Society, and I know what an effort it was to for you to get there. So I'm pleased to see you yes. here again. My question was about the donor funding and what are the roles of the various donors currently, and what do you see? You said you see them phasing out in the future, but what are they now?
Yeah. This is a very good question. We have had good support in Afghanistan from the donor community in all sectors. And including telecommunication. The satellite networks I explained for the provincial capitals and for the districts are actually, one is funded by the World Bank and the second one is funded by UECID. And it was in amount of about $14 million, which is actually now today making a very positive impact in the country. Whenever we open a new district unit and the district get connected, it is making a big news in Afghanistan. Actually, it is a big in the quality of the network is very good, and the people are getting a very important and valuable service. We have had support from some of our neighboring countries like India and Iran. We are doing some projects with them. And I think the major contribution which we have from the World Bank in UCID is also not just in infrastructure, but more in the development of the necessary institutions within the government and within the Ministry of Communication. For example, one of the good achievement for us has been that the word regulation in Afghanistan, if you look in Afghan dictionary, there is no word for regulation because this is something new. But Ministry of Communication was the first ministry actually to establish a regulatory unit for telecommunication. And this is thanks to the good support that we have received from UECID and the World Bank in establishing this unit, which has been a tremendously important task they are performing. And thanks to this good work by this unit is that we have a very reliable telecommunication competitive environment and also trusted by all the parties. And thanks to this transparency and fairness of this unit, that we are able to attract investment into the telecom sector. And of course, I must say that, as I said in my speech also, despite all these developments, it does not mean that we are ready. I think the support, the support, we need to have continued support. I had a meeting with the World Bank this morning, and we discussed on what next steps, what we need to do more in Afghanistan, what is still needed to be done. And I think we will be doing the same kind of discussion with UECID to explain our future needs and plans. And we hope that the support will continue.
Could you and Jim perhaps just give us the three things that you think need to happen next? I mean, just give us that quick list. I know we're running out of time here, but just if you've been going around town describing your priorities, I think you probably each have sort of the favorite three things that have to happen to continue the successful track that you're on.
Well, actually, we have quite one good thing for the Ministry of Communication has been is that whenever we make plans, we try to make them happen. This is very important. So like that lady said, she was there in my ministry 3 years ago. Maybe she knows what the plans were, and I think she can now say that we have done everything we said that we will do. I think this is very important. So we keep very much focused on our plans, on our schedules, on our actions. And together with my team in the ministry, I on a daily basis follow on important events that should happen. Where is that now? How much progress we have made? So I think this is one of the important thing is to, when you have a plan, to not to have just a document sitting on a shelf, but actually to make it happen. So today I can tell you we have a plan for the future, and it has a long list of things that we want to do, really a long list. And I am, last year, for example, I tell you last year, I had on my level some 15 to 20 important things to happen. So in fact, at the end of the year, I had a meeting, and I said, okay, let's go through the list. What was the things we were supposed to do? Had we done it or not? So we had to tick each one of them. Yes, this we have done, This we have done maybe 80%, this 90%, this 100%. But this is our style. So we have the same thing for the future. We have a long list. But if you want me to tell three important things, I think, in my opinion, I want to see happens is, one is our optical fiber network to be completed. I think this is a nationally very important project for Afghanistan, so that we do establish a broadband network in Afghanistan, which will be like the national ICT superhighway for all the operators, everybody to use it. And this will be even useful for transmitting the TVs in radio channels across the country, because you see today we don't have that kind of possibility to bring all the TV channels across the country. So it will be used not only by ICT, but it can also be useful for the media, television, radios, and all these things. So that is, I think, one of my top priority. The second one is, I think, is the ICT. We now want to focus on the use of ICT, how to use ICT to bring better, more effective governance. For example, you all hear nowadays from Afghanistan that there is too much corruption. So I think we are talking to the World Bank, to USAID, and to others to bring about development of ICT and use ICT for better governance, for the government to make it capable to provide services more effectively to the public, and also to reduce government bureaucracy and corruption. This is, I think, the second important area. And the third thing I want to actually see happen is the expansion, the continued expansion of the services to cover more and more of the population, be it by the private sector or be it by the other special projects such as the village communication network. I think these will be the three important areas. Yeah.
Very clear. Thank you very much. We have one last question from this gentleman here, and then are you okay?
Okay.
Brilliant, in fact. Good. Well, thank you very much. I think we do have Kristen and Chris. Do you want to? Can you give us a 5-minute presentation? Is that possible to summarize your? Please, why don't you step up and if you need to sit here, or if you'd like to, if you can be heard from there, whichever. Do you need to sit here?
Okay.
Okay.
I can sit now.
Yeah.
Look at you.
If there's another question while we're waiting, or if you want, why don't you start, Chris?
Okay.
I just want you to tell us what's going on.
I'm not taking you up, please.
No. Okay, thank you very much. We just want to have a very quick presentation, and then we'll launch into a demonstration of the Invenio communication station. There's been a lot of discussion today of rural ICT and the plans of the ministry to extend ICT into rural areas of Afghanistan. And I think that a lot of people may be wondering how that's possible in the absence of electricity. And so what we want to do today very briefly is to introduce some basic issues involving energy for ICT in rural areas, some of the different options, and some of the different ICT equipment choices that you can make that actually can make it feasible to deploy in rural areas.
Why don't you quickly introduce who you
okay.
are and where you're from.
Okay, thanks. I'm Chris Rovero. I'm with the Clean Energy Group at Winrock International. Winrock is a rural development NGO active in about 50 countries.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kristen Peterson, and I'm with Invenio. Invenio's a new organization. We're about 2 years old. We're a social enterprise that focuses our mission on bringing ICT out to remote and rural places, to people and organizations who need it most in very remote and rural places in the developing world. Go ahead.
Okay. Do we have the...
Just about.
We may be a bit too remote for you.
Okay, very good. Basically, if you look at deploying rural ICT and the power sources that you can use, it comes down to four basic ones if grid extension is not an option. You have diesel or gasoline generators, you have solar power, you have wind power, and you have micro hydro. And each of these has their own characteristics and profiles in terms of the capital and operating and maintenance costs, in terms of how widely deployable they are, how widely can you really use them, and other characteristics. To date, the main option that's been used in Afghanistan has been diesel generation, which is very widely deployable. You can put it anywhere. It has relatively lower capital costs. The main problems are that it has high operating costs, both in terms of the fuel and also the maintenance. One thing that people often don't realize. One thing people often don't realize with diesel is that while it's very reliable if you do your maintenance, if you don't do your maintenance, it actually becomes very unreliable and very short-lived. And you'll be lucky if your generators last out the year. This table here, it basically shows the four different generation technologies or power technologies on the left-hand side, and shows the respective capital and O&M cost characteristics, the site specificity, and some of the other key characteristics.
Chris, one thing I would suggest is if you make that available to us and people want it, we'll be happy to post it. We'll find some way to get it to anybody who's interested and make it available so that you don't. I know because our time is a little
very good. Okay, and next slide. This is just one illustrative case we want to give, since we know that in many cases the only widely deployable alternative to diesel generators is going to be solar power. And people who have looked at solar power will know that it can be very expensive depending on how much energy you need. And so what we've done here is we've shown for three different types of computers, a Pentium 4 desktop with a CRT monitor, a standard monitor, a lower power desktop with an LCD monitor, which consumes less energy, and then the Invenio communication station. And we've shown three different cases, uses of 2, 4, and 8 hours per day. And the cost figures there are the cost of the solar power system to support one computer for either 2, 4, or 8 hours a day. And so you can see that...
For the year.
No, this is the investment cost for the solar energy systems. But what you see is that depending on the type of ICT equipment you pick, the cost implications can be tremendous, particularly if you're looking at possibly doing 2, 3, 4, or more computers. Okay, next. Okay, since we only have a few minutes, I'll stop right there. But the basic points are that there are some good, rugged, low-cost options you can use for rural ICT, and particularly in areas that don't have reliable power, we think it's really important to focus on those. I'll turn it over to Kristen now to explain the Invenio communication station, and then we'll launch into a demo. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us here today. I'd like to continue in discussion on a little bit about what considerations need to be made for bringing ICTs out to remote and rural places. It can be done. And Chris has really gone deep into some of the key physical issues, the most important being power. If you don't have power, you can't run ICTs. But there are many ways to go about running power to a system, and you need to take into consideration the type of system and choose a system that's lowest power possible so that you can operate it on existing dependable power. Additionally, you need to think about ruggedness. Out in rural places, the environment can be very challenging. It can be dusty, it can be hot, it can be extremely cold. All of those things need to be taken into account when you're looking at putting computers into villages. Additionally, you need to think about connectivity. You need to look at a system that can use different types of connectivity, because oftentimes in villages, you're not only off the power grid, but you're off the communications grid. So you have to look at systems that take into account different ways to connect back to the communications grid, whether it be satellite or cellular or basic PSTN public switch network. You also run into very challenging operational environments. So what you find is there are a lot of new users in very rural places who've never experienced computers before or even telephony before, although most folks have experienced telephony in most cases, understand what a telephone is and how to use it, and are very fast to adopt a telephone. But what's important to think about is that the user interfaces, both for the end users and for the administrators, need to be very intuitive and easy to administrate. At the same time, they need to scale up to intermediate users, users who need to use ICTs for office purposes, for communications around with spreadsheets and word processing and those kind of things, and also for use with multimedia applications. Additionally, what's important is you can't just take a computer and drop it into a village. It's not going to sit there and operate on its own for a host of reasons we've already discussed, but also someone needs to really own it, operate it, understand it, and maintain it. And so there needs to be an infrastructure in place to ensure that that infrastructure stays up and running. Oftentimes, you need to ensure that a couple of things also at the end user level. First, that end users can learn, are trained to use the ICT systems, and trained to use and operate them, and also they're also provided different types of applications that make sense to them, that make it useful for them. And finally, there needs to be some type of a support infrastructure for that operator, so that when something happens that's beyond their scope of ability to figure out, they need to have that support system in place. And finally, and probably second to power, and most importantly, is cost. Once you get a system out into a rural village for ICTs, telephony, internet access, and computing, you really need to think about cost. First, acquisition cost needs to be as low as possible, but sometimes you need to make trade-offs in acquisition costs so that your ongoing operational costs can be ultra-low and can be sustained by creating economic or revenue-generating opportunities in the village to pay for the system and the operating, the owner-operator that takes care of it, maintains it, and makes it available to the village. So these are some of the considerations to take into account when you're looking at bringing ICTs into very rural areas. I'd like to just talk briefly about what Invenio's system can do. It's essentially an any-powered communication system. Let me just back up for a minute and tell you one more bit about Invenio. Invenio's mission is to bring ICTs out to remote and rural places, but how we were formed because we believe in the power of ICTs to have the ability, access to ICTs, to change lives, to allow people to call a doctor if their child is sick, to allow for better education, and to allow farmers to find ways, in simple ways, to find out what the right prices are for their crops. So in many ways, ICTs can make a profound impact that are very simple and we take for granted every day. So how we create solutions, though, we create solutions for ICTs, for organizations who are delivering ICT to remote and rural places. And what we do is we take existing technologies and we integrate them very tightly and make them able to be powered by any type of a power solution, and connected to any type of a communications grid. So our first solution, which we launched in March and is now operating in four countries, Uganda, Ghana, Rwanda, and Haiti, is a system that is very specifically designed to provide communications to villages that don't have electricity or access to communications. And so the system connects into data and telephony grid at a regional village level, and then brings out, using long-distance Wi-Fi, communications to rural villages. Yeah. It's a what you're seeing here and what you'll see demonstrated is a setup that goes into a rural village. It's got no moving parts. It's ultra-low power consumption. It's very durable and is resistant to heat, dust, cold, and moisture.
Kristen, could I just interrupt for 1 second? I know the minister needs to leave, and Jim has to go with him. So if we could just thank them, and then you have another 5 minutes. Is that about
We'd
right?
We'd like to invite you to just take a look right now at a live demo. So thank you.
All right. Thanks. I'm sorry.
Okay, thanks.